الله أكبر الله أكبر.
God, the beneficent, the merciful, the creator and sustainer of the universe, peace and blessings upon his servant and messenger Muhammad forever. Amin. I greet you with a greeting that is common in Islam, Assalamu alaikum, which means peace be unto you. I'm your host, Hamid Rashid. Today we have our 45th program in our series dealing with the social system of Islam. We'll be continuing our discussion of dissolution of marriage in Islam. I have joining me on the program, as usual, Dr. Jamal Badawi of St. Mary's University. Brother Jamal, assalamu alaikum.
Alaykum assalam wa rahmatullah.
Could I have you very quickly summarize the main points that we touched on in our program last week?
Okay, the main issue that was raised really is that divorce in Islam is not as easy as some people may think of it, and that there are certain preventative measures before divorce even take place, like careful selection of the spouses, trying to live by the Islamic law in one's relationship to his or her spouse. Secondly, there are certain measures also, in case there is a family dispute, to try to contain it and have certain measures between husband and wife, if not perhaps involving some relatives in a kind of arbitration. But in no case should swearing or cruelty could be resorted to. And we indicated that all of these measures, preventative or otherwise, do not prejudice the right of the woman to seek divorce if there is a good reason behind.
Mm-hmm. Well, now you made some mention of the wife seeking or initiating divorce. I think the common notion about Islam is that divorce in Islam is always the exclusive right of the husband. Could you perhaps comment and clarify that?
It's common, but not necessarily true.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, this is one of four forms of dissolution of marriage in Islam. In fact, if you look at it in terms of the tradition or most common, yes, most cases the husband divorced the wife unilaterally, but this is one. There are cases also in Islamic law where the wife unilaterally can divorce her husband. Thirdly, there are cases also where the wife can initiate and obtain divorce through an Islamic court.
Mm-hmm.
And fourthly, there are cases also where divorce could be obtained by mutual agreement between the two spouses. So to say it's only the exclusive right of the husband is a common mistaken notion. The principle of the right to seek an end to unhappy and unsuccessful marriage is established, and it applies both to husband and wife, even though procedures and particulars might vary.
Mm-hmm. Under what conditions may the wife be able to unilaterally divorce her husband?
Well, there are two basic cases where the wife can unilaterally use that right. One can be called delegated repudiation. The Islamic term for that is asma, that if the wife at the time of marriage or afterwards agree with the husband that there will be a transfer of the right to divorce to her, then if and when she desires, she can divorce her husband unilaterally. But it has to be part of the nuptial contract. That's one. The second case can be called conditional repudiation, which means that at the time of negotiating the marriage contract, the wife could stipulate that the husband should be obliged to fulfill XYZ duties, or that if the husband commit ABC type of acts against her, let's say cruelty or mistreatment, then she would have the right also to divorce him, because as we indicated in a previous program, marriage contract also is both a religious as well as a civil contract, where conditions which are not contrary to Islamic law must be implemented and enforced. There may be difference between Muslim jurists about the nature and the specific format of these two types, but there is basis for this unilateral divorce even by the wife.
Mm-hmm. Well, you also mentioned that a Muslim wife may seek divorce through the judicial process.
That's right.
What are some of the acceptable grounds to seek such a divorce?
There are several grounds. Let me give seven as example to show the spirit of Islamic law in this. First is the inability or refusal of the husband to provide for his wife, even if his wife is rich. Because in Islam, it is the full responsibility of the husband to maintain his wife. And this is the opinion of the majority of jurists, including such towering figures as Malik, Shafi'i, and Ahmad. Mm-hmm. Some, like Hanafi, said that if it's just a matter of temporary poverty, or if the person does not have that much and still able to maintain to the best of his ability, the marriage cannot be dissolved. A second basis or ground is abuse or mistreatment, such as, for example, cruel or severe beating or so-called wife battering that you hear about in the media, to which 10% of women in North America seem to be subjected to. This is totally forbidden in Islam, this severe type of chastisement. Likewise, cursing or swearing at one's wife, forcing her to do something which is wrong from an Islamic point of view, this could constitute a base for divorce. A third case could be the case of impotence on the part of the husband, and this is in recognition in Islam of the natural instinctive right of the wife, just as it is recognized for the husband too. A fourth ground could be the serious or incurable diseases, which I'm not talking here about the flu or something,
yes,
but serious repulsive type of diseases or insanity. If a person becomes insane, for example, why should the wife be stuck with him for the rest of her life? If she chooses, of course, there's no objection, but she has the right. Fifthly, extended absence or desertion by the husband. And there could be two cases there. The case where the whereabouts of the deserted husband is, or the husband who deserted his wife is known, in which case a Muslim judge can give him a certain appointed time to come back to his wife, or else he can grant her divorce, yes, if she wishes. Or if the husband who deserted his wife is not known, his hereabouts are not clear, the judge also can give a certain waiting period and divorce the wife if she wishes after that. Some say that 6 months would be enough waiting period, like in Malik. Some say 1 year, like in Ahmed. But in each case, whatever the case, she has the right also to obtain a divorce. Sixthly, by analogy to the previous case, the long imprisonment of the husband, because it's just similar to desertion, really. Mm-hmm. Whether it's interpreted as divorce, like Malik suggests, or annulment, like Ahmed suggests, she has the right to get out of it. Finally, there are also all cases of annulment, such as deception at the time of marriage by giving false information or concealing important information, in which case a wife still is entitled to seek divorce.
Mm-hmm. How about the situations of divorce by mutual consent of both sides? When is this applicable?
There are two basic cases for that. One is known as mubara'a, or mutually agreeing between themselves to release each other from the vow of marriage, mutual agreement, in which case they can agree among themselves as to what are the conditions, financial or otherwise, for the settlement. This could be done. Second case is the case of khul'a. Some translate that as self-redemption. Mm-hmm. This would be the case of the wife who might be unhappy with her husband, but she cannot really fault him in any legal sense, that is, his fulfilling his duties and responsibilities. And she fears that if this relationship continues, she may be tempted to, fall into some error. Mm-hmm. In which case, the rule in Islamic law is that they could agree among themselves that she can return back to him any financial privilege that she obtained from him by way of gifts, marital gifts, for example, or whatever he gave to her, in return for obtaining the solution for the marriage. There is a reference, by the way, in the Quran to this particular form or khul'a in chapter 2, verse 229. But there are a few observations about that form. One is that a wife should not ask for this self-redemption or khul'a unless there is a good reason in her, at least best appreciation or understanding. Because as the Prophet indicated in Ahmad and An-Nasa'i, it is not proper for a woman to seek this kind of dissolution if there is no good reason behind it. Mm-hmm. Secondly, even if the husband refuses dissolution, it must be imposed on him. In fact, there is a story at the time of the Prophet, as narrated in Bukhari and An-Nasa'i, a man by the name of Thabit ibn Qais and his wife again wanted to use that right, and he loved her, he didn't want to, but the Prophet instructed him, خذ الحديقة وطلقها تطليقة, because he gave her an orchard and she offered to return it back. He said, alright, take the garden or the orchard from her and divorce her, she wanted, you don't have to force it. A third observation is that a man in Islam or the husband is prohibited from trying to oppress or pressure his wife so that she offers to return this marital gift to him in order to get out of the marital relationship. That's not regarded as fair. And in chapter 4, verse 19 in the Quran, there is mention of that. The other observation also, which is more technical in nature, is that in this particular type of dissolution of marriage, it could take place at any time.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, the procedures that you've outlined seem to be quite fair, but some people have raised the argument, why can't the wife have the absolute right of divorce in any case?
Unilateral, under any circumstances?
Under any circumstances.
Well, I think we have to distinguish here between two things. One is the principle established in Islamic law for the right of either husband or wife to seek an end to a miserable or difficult, unsuccessful type of marriage, and that right is for both. And between the specific procedures and the initiation of the process. First of all, to say that the wife should have exactly the same right without any reason to divorce her husband unilaterally, except for the cases, of course, that were outlined previously, might not be to the best interest of the family or even the wife herself. Aside from the fact that this reduces the opportunity or the chances for dissolution of marriage, at least four points should be remembered. First of all, the purpose of marriage in Islam is continuation, is permanency, and not just divorce or dissolution. And if this is the case, we may remark that while man or the husband is capable of being sometimes emotional or taking a compulsive decision that's not well thought of and divorce his wife, however, it is fair to say that a woman, on the average, in comparative terms, seem to be relatively more emotional than man. And this is not a deficiency. In fact, this is part of her function as a wife, and more importantly as a mother. That's not a deficiency to be emotional. But the danger also of that emotionality, if the wife can divorce at the spur of the moment without any waiting or procedure or certain restriction, that she may destroy her family and future and then regret it when it's too late to make correction. Secondly, is that while there is no winner really in the case of divorce, everybody loses, at least psychologically in the short run, and perhaps even longer than that. But still, the man in Islam, in Islamic law, or the husband, stands to lose much more in the case of divorce. Why? Because if he divorces, then the wife would be entitled for the entire marital gift, whether the part that she received already or the part that is due to her. It becomes due immediately. She is entitled to full maintenance during the waiting period, which could go to 3 months, could go in some cases, like in pregnancy, to even 9 months. Thirdly, she would be entitled to child support if she has the custody of the child, which is usually the case when the child is small. Fourthly, according to some jurists, she is also entitled to another consolation type of payment as a result of divorce, some extended as 1 year type of maintenance, mm-hmm. or to complete 1 year at the expense of the husband. If you look at it the other way around, you find that the wife does not suffer financial losses as a result of divorce. Her property before marriage remains intact and does not transfer to her husband, whether she is married or divorced. Anything that she earns on her property during marital life, she is not responsible to pay a penny to her husband or spend on household. So this really shows that in the case of divorce, it is man really who stands to lose a lot more financially, at least in the context of Islamic law. And this may act as a natural deterrent on the husband taking a compulsive action towards divorce. He stands to lose a great deal, more than the wife does. And on the other hand, it would be unfair for with all the financial securities and privileges given to the wife but not to the husband in Islamic law, that she can at any time divorce her husband and still keep all the gifts and property that he has given to her, whether or not she has a good reason for divorce. In fact, a third point perhaps could be raised here, that if Islamic law did not provide some control on this, any unscrupulous woman could get married and divorced so many times as she wishes, and every time she gets the marital gift, which could be substantial, she get all the expenditure, she doesn't have to spend a penny, and just keep doing that and perhaps exploit also. Islam and Islamic law does not only protect the wife, it also protects the husband. I mean, he's entitled also to some protection against possible exploitation like this. The fourth point is that with all of these controls, even as indicated before, if the woman has a genuine reason to ask for divorce, the avenues are open in the variety of ways that has been already been described.
Well, for many people who are not familiar with the Islamic system of law, it's surprising that in some circumstances parties may be able to obtain a divorce without resort to the legal process. Mm-hmm. They ask the question, well, why aren't both sides required to seek divorce only through a court of law?
You mean no unilateral by either side, or even excluding agreements?
Yes,
between? Right. Well, first of all, if there is an agreement between both sides and they find that this is mutually beneficial to them, like the various cases we described, Mubara'a or Khula, the various techniques, why should the court impose their will on them? Okay, that's one. I'm not saying that society has nothing to say, but there are cases where it's mutually advantageous for both of them. But more importantly, I think, is that to have divorce through courts results in lots of delays, as any judge, family judge can tell, the delays and waiting long time. And during this period, a wife is prohibited from remarrying, and sometimes it takes years in litigation. Secondly, to go to court in a family problem without really a strong justification generates a situation where every side would have to justify to the judge that his or her spouse is at fault and trying to reveal all kind of weaknesses, rightly or wrongly, which of course is not a very pleasant situation. In fact, this bitterness resulting from legal litigation, if they were permitted in a widespread manner, could destroy any opportunity for future reconciliation. Another reason is that divorce and marriage is something that is very personal. There could be very personal and private reason for a man or woman to seek a divorce. And these psychological reasons for people who are not uninvolved directly in the marital relationship might be very difficult to appreciate and evaluate. There are cases, of course, however, where injustice could be inflicted unless the law or the court of law, Islamic court of law, can step in which case we said that there's the door open. But Islam does not encourage having every case just being presented before a court of law. And we have seen in a previous program that in some cases family arbitration could solve the problem. Even private arrangement between husband and wife to agree on certain arrangement might save the marriage without undue interference on the part of others. But mind you, even in the case where the husband uses the unilateral right to divorce his wife, it is not just something that takes place on the spur of the moment like that. There are certain restrictions and controls also, conditions to be valid.
Well, could we perhaps have you comment on some of these conditions that are necessary for the validity of divorce?
Okay. For divorce to be valid, the husband uttering the divorce must be sane, must be conscious, under no compulsion, so not that his father say you have to divorce your wife or something, no compulsion. And he should really mean fully what he says when he utters divorce. A second condition is that the word used for divorce should be clear and unequivocal in terms, you know, the terms should be unequivocal. Whether the divorce is, or the word is direct or indirect, in writing or orally, in person or through a messenger, it has to be clear and unequivocal. A third condition is that a person cannot divorce his wife at any time. There are certain restrictions and certain periods where divorce is forbidden. And fourthly, it should be noted that the first three conditions automatically eliminates from validity of divorce the case of a person who is under the influence of drug or alcohol, a person who is intoxicated, which is prohibited in Islam in any way. But if that happens and he divorces, that's not regarded as valid. Secondly, it also excludes people who utter divorce unseriously, just like in some cultures a person say, oh, you must be my guest or else I'll divorce my wife, you must do this or that or else I'll divorce my wife. This is regarded as lagh, or just vain talk, which is not to be taken seriously. And some jurists said that the atonement for uttering this would be to feed 10 poor people or to fast 3 days to atone for it, but divorce will not take place. And this also eliminates or excludes the case of divorce under certain types or states of anger where the person does not appreciate what he says.
Well, now that is an interesting area because, you know, almost any divorce is going to involve some level of anger and upset. How can you distinguish between the various states of anger which may result in a validation or invalidity of a divorce?
A divorce. Well, a very nice subdivision was suggested by one of the great jurists, Ibn al-Qayyim. And he said, there are three possible cases or degrees of anger. I know the lines might be hazy, but he said there is the case of anger which is very extreme, to the point that the person does not really want to say what he's saying, does not appreciate or understand even what he's uttering. Extreme case. And he said that the consensus of Muslim jurists is that this type of divorce is invalid, because it is just analogous to a person who is really out of his mind. So it does not result in automatic dissolution of the family. The second case is the case of moderate degree of anger. And of course, nobody divorces unless there is some anger, you're right. But there is a type of anger where the person fully understand what he says, has the premeditated intention to end the marital relationship. And again, Ibn al-Qayyim said that the consensus among Muslim jurists that this is a valid divorce. There's no problem with this. But the one that is rather controversial is what might be called a medium degree of anger, where the person is not totally out of his mind, but he utters divorce without appreciating the consequences of this uttering or utterance. And as soon as he utters divorce, he started again regretting, or shortly afterwards he starts regretting and wondering why did I do such, you know, bad thing. And this the jurists differed. Some said the divorce is valid, some said it is invalid. The opinion that seems to be more consistent with various facets of Islamic law is that it does not validate the marriage. In other words, marriage under this moderate or medium degree of anger should not take place.
Divorce should not take place.
Oh, sorry, divorce should not take place. And there are a number of reasons behind giving more credence or weighing more weight to this interpretation. First is that there are several sayings of the Prophet, peace be upon him. Some are narrated, for example, in Ahmad, Abu Dawood, and Hakim, and Ibn Majah. In which the Prophet said that there is no divorce or freedom in the case of Ighlaq. And Ighlaq was interpreted by Abu Dawood to mean the case where the person is under strong state of anger. In fact, in another saying of the Prophet narrated in Bukhari, he said, "Innama at-talaqu 'an watar," that is, divorce is only when there is deliberate intention. It's not just something casual or out of the spur of the moment or outburst of emotions. Secondly, in the Quran, a principle is established that in the case of oath, for example, which could be analogous. And in chapter 2, verse 225, it says, "لا يؤاخذكم الله باللغو في أيمانكم." God does not hold you responsible for something you utter just out of, لغو, not really with clear intention or deliberate intention. A third point is that under medium degree of anger, where the person does not appreciate the consequences of utterance like this, he may be somewhat analogous to a person who is under intoxication, which we indicated would invalidate the pronouncement of divorce. And finally, the lack of acceptance of this as a base or a basis for divorce seems to be consistent with the main purpose of Islamic law, and that is to protect the family and maintain its integrity as much as it is realistic and possible to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned a bit earlier that there are specific times when divorce is not permissible. Could I have you comment and clarify what those times are?
Well, first of all, a husband cannot divorce his wife when she is during her monthly cycle. Secondly, except, of course, in the case of khula, or self-redemption that we talked about before, which we said it could take place any time. But other than that, he cannot divorce at the time of at the time of haid or menses. Secondly, even if the wife is not going through her monthly cycle, which is the case which is called, according to one writer, fresh purity, that's after the cycle is finished, he cannot also divorce her during this period if intimate matrimonial relationship took place. So that period also would be excluded. He has to wait until the following cycle, and then after the cycle is over, then he can pronounce divorce. Thirdly, a husband in Islam cannot divorce his wife during the postnatal recovery period after childbirth. Divorce under these circumstances or these particular periods is regarded as contra-sunnah divorce, or bid'i, which means divorce which is contrary to the path of the Prophet or contrary to the Islamic law. Some jurists go to the point of saying that it is invalid and the husband would be required to repeal it and then pronounce it or utter it in the permissible times. So these are the times where divorce could not be regarded as legitimate. But of course, if divorce has taken place and if the required waiting period has elapsed, a husband has no right to keep his wife or force her to stay without releasing her, like the Quran indicates in chapter 2 in verse 230, that you should not hold your wife just for the purpose of hurting her or oppressing her or pressuring her once the various requirements and waiting period has already elapsed.
Mm-hmm. But we'll end it at that for today. We want to thank you for watching our program and invite you back next week. Assalamu alaikum. Peace be unto you.
Allahu Akbar.